You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations Podcast. From Los Angeles, I'm Paul Welsh. I was a guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Londell Theus Jr., who improv fans might know from Rococo and a bunch of other stuff. What's up, Londell?
Nah, that's it. Just Rococo. You know, that's my main thing. The other stuff is not important, you know.
What other stuff do you want people to know?
Just that I'm a good guy.
I have Tupperware.
I always carry food with me because it's important.
We both did. We both came into this podcast with our packed meals.
You know, that's why we got those cuts.
That's right.
We're cut up.
So what would other people know you from?
I would say if it improv-wise, indie improv, five-bitted Negro.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
All-black team that I helped start, that we were doing a lot of shows for like a year.
Yeah, I remember that.
Doing it all the time. And we haven't performed in a while, so a lot of people are like, when are you guys going to perform again? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. We're all busy. More, you know, professional stuff happens and, you know, you can't meet up. But I would say that, too. Sometimes the hip-hop improv show that Cypher Sounds brings to LA. Done that a couple of times.
Great. That's enough stuff. You do a lot of stuff. Yeah. So, cool. I think the first thing that we should talk about is, I guess, I don't know how to say it in a non-douchey way. What is your sort of, like, journey to get here?
First,
like, what brought you to UCB?
Yeah. You know what's crazy? My dad actually brought me to UCB. I was still playing college basketball at the time when he decided.
Where'd you play?
I played at New Mexico State and College of Idaho.
Great. Everyone, all big fans out there.
Yeah, big fans. A lot of improv fans out there.
Yeah. Big crossover.
So my dad just decided to start acting at 50. Mm-hmm. And so the summer when I was home, he was, he took UCB because that was one of the only schools where you got to perform at the end of each class.
Oh, cool.
So he was like, I want to perform. I'm not going to take three, you know, courses and never get on stage.
Yeah.
So he had to take me to go see some shows. And so I saw Convoy was my first improv show.
Uh-huh.
And I was blown away.
Who's that?
That's with Alex.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah,
I was like, ooh, I didn't pick up on that.
Great.
But yeah, so I'd never seen anything like that. So I was like, wow, that kind of planted the seed in my mind for the future. Because he's like, I think he'd be good at this. I'm like, whatever. I'm balling, you know. Yeah. And so then a few years later, I hurt my knee. Couldn't play ball anymore. Decided to start going into comedy. Mm-hmm. And after I did theater for 2 years at Cal State Long Beach, I'm like, I want to do improv. You know, I had never satisfied my curiosity for that. Uh-huh. And so UCB was the first place I went because of my dad.
Great. Was he good? Did you go see his class
I
shows?
I never saw shows because I was only there for a little bit during the summer.
Oh, okay.
So I had to leave. Yeah. So I would improvise with him a little bit on camera when he just had to like do acting exercises.
Uh-huh.
So he was pretty funny.
He's pretty funny.
But he's a serious guy. So, so then when I started taking classes, my first class was an intensive 101, and I had done stand up for like a year before that. So I knew I was funny.
Right.
And I knew I was a funny stand up, but what was weird going into 101 is like, man, I felt like I was not funny.
That happens.
Yeah. I was like,
who is your 101 teacher?
Will McLaughlin.
Great.
And yeah, he was great. But there was just so much, especially in an intensive four classes every week. There was so much thrown at me. I was like, it was just, you know, kind of hard to grapple. But then I kind of went away from it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing more stand up. And then February in like 2013, I did 201 with Drew DeFonso Marks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a class that like got me back into it. Like, not like I haven't stopped since then.
Oh, why?
I just loved that type of comedy through scene work.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of done enough just comedy on my own, and there's I love doing characters and stuff like that, but there's only a a certain amount of comedic things you can do and things you can explore when you're just by yourself doing stand-up.
Right.
When you actually get to experience comedy through scene work and through like something that's a little more narrative, you're still playing games and stuff like that, but you get to balance it off other people. You're not so much in your head. You get to, and you know what's funny? I felt like I became a funnier person when I was doing improv because when I was doing stand-up, I knew that I can create something that's funny, but I didn't know if I was just a funny person.
Yeah.
And I think in doing improv, it forces you to find out if you're just you, yourself, if you're a funny person. Because I really honed like what I thought was funny in myself, my own point of view. That kind of came across through improv.
Important, right? Like some, and that sounds really dumb, but like there's students who never find that.
Yeah.
You know, or people that don't. And it is so important to how you improvise. I think that's when you really start to take off, when you're like, oh, that's what I really like. I'm going to do more of that.
Big time. Because there was
what is that for you? What do you like?
I like, there's a certain amount of definitely physicality that I like in improv too. And I tend to like those characters who are very emotionally strong in how they feel, but they're not afraid to totally back off it for a second and question themselves. Like, I think earlier...
That's a good straight man.
Yeah, like, earlier on, I thought, like, when you hit game and when you're the unusual character, you have to totally believe in your philosophy and you can't stray from it.
Yeah.
And so, but sometimes that'd be unrealistic. And so when I would start seeing scenes where someone would be hardcore for like the first two big game moves, they're like, this is what I think. This is how it is. And then they're totally back off and like, oh, my God, you're right. What am I doing?
Right.
What am I? I'm so sorry. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, let's go back to just, you know, preparing for this 4th of July barbecue. I'm sorry. Wow, that was weird. And then have it just come back strong again.
Yeah. I think that's great. I love when a scene, a person's like, I know this is crazy, but... this is how I act.
Yeah, yeah.
When they know, you know, when they're aware.
That awareness, yeah. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, there was a big shift for me as far as like having the boldness to make certain moves too, because most of the classes I was doing before, even up to 401, I was like the only black guy in the class. So there were certain areas that never even came to my mind that I wanted to do that I just kind of didn't do. And I almost didn't even know I was stopping myself from making certain moves.
What do you mean?
As far as like, so if there's a scene where if someone's doing like a play and someone's like, yeah, we're doing The King and I. And instantly I'm like, if I walk out on the scene as like a black guy in the scene, like, hold up, what the hell are we? There's only black people here. Why are we doing The King and I? This isn't, you know what I mean?
I see.
This isn't... you know, and then kind of fold that into the game where they're trying to make a totally different culture.
Right.
Do The King and I as a thing. Some of those moves I wouldn't even make because I was just like, you know.
Do you feel like you got early on in classes or even still like labeled what you look like automatically?
To be honest, not too much.
That's
actually
good.
Not too much. It was actually good. But there were moves I wouldn't make because I didn't want to play into... something that was easy or, you know, kind of cheap. And then when I saw white women play, which is there's another all-black improv group, I saw them play for the first time. And they were doing scenes that were like characters that I always loved doing and people that I knew. But they would still be on point, very top of intelligence, very on game. It wasn't cheap. But they had a certain flavor and a certain flavor of characters and scene work that I had never seen in improv or done in improv before, but that I always knew I wanted to do. And it felt like when I saw them play, I felt like there was permission, like, oh yeah, you can do scene work as like, you know, as just that one brother I knew that was, you know, shooting dice always at recess and stuff like that.
That really happened.
But still be, oh yeah, there was a guy, we used to always shoot dice at recess and he'd have his own dice and stuff like this. Then we start getting trouble and then, you know, a teacher would confiscate our dice and stuff like that at recess. And
that's so crazy because I think like if I played dice in my high school or in my grammar school, they'd be like, great.
Really?
Play those dice. Because they wouldn't know what it, because it doesn't mean
that's
it, you know what I mean?
That's true,
like,
yeah.
It wouldn't be a big dice game. They'd just be like, well, whatever.
Right,
kids found some dice.
Yeah, great.
What are you going to do?
There's some math involved in that.
So that gave you permission, you felt like, well, that's an interesting thing. I at some point had a teacher say to me, like, your authenticity, like the things that are real about you that are important come in the way that you and in improv.
Yeah.
So you get more towards who, towards the player you want to be when you start to think, what is my adding to the scene? And I always love that. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about. You Definitely. Found how you would add.
The adding, the specific of the of what you're adding to the scene, all those specifics, when I'm early on training in improv, there's so much math involved and there's so many new concepts.
Right.
I'm not really focused on my own authenticity. I'm focused mm-hmm. on how do I grasp these concepts. Mm-hmm. And so for like the first 2 years or first two classes, 101 and 201, I didn't feel totally myself because I'm just trying to grasp these concepts.
Right.
Then like starting in 301, 401, I had done enough indie stuff and seen like white women and then started Phi Beta Negro where mm-hmm. I was so confident in my own authenticity and the stuff I thought was funny and my own specifics from my own life or from stuff I'm seeing that I'll add it into a scene unapologetically.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the main thing, is that main growth of playing unapologetically for what I thought was funny mm-hmm. and for what I thought had like credence in a scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, the certain specifics yeah. and stuff like that.
And how do you feel like that? How do you feel about that now of like playing unapologetically? I think that's a great concept, and I think it's a great way to play. But when you're on something like Harold Knight,
yeah.
and that's the thing that people don't realize when they're like, I want to be on Harold Knight, I'll die to be on Harold Knight. You're like, well, it's hard.
Yeah. The thing,
you get a lot of notes.
There's a lot of notes. No, even if you have a killer show.
So, yeah.
That's the function is you're always going to get a lot of specific notes, yeah. nitpicky notes, because you're trying to,
Do you still feel like you'll play fearlessly? Unapologetically in that circumstance?
So I feel definitely more so, probably not 100%, but mm-hmm. I think there's a certain part of me.
Yeah.
There's a certain, my own authenticity as far as like being a black man and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's certain choices to make. I always feel unapologetic playing like that.
Yeah.
Where before I didn't.
Yeah.
But now I do. So that has never been an issue, but maybe just even boldness of certain moves and in taking a chance and straying away from, you know, making a choice, and I'm like, I don't know if this is on game, but I want to make this choice.
Great.
Sometimes
you
stuff like
it.
That. Yeah, sometimes stuff like that I might not do as much as mm-hmm. I did in indie improv on Harold Knight.
I see.
You know?
Because mm-hmm. you know you'll get a note.
Because it's like, in my head, I don't know if this is on game, but who cares? Let me just do it. And I know I'm going to get that note like, hey, that kind of took us away from.
And you do it. Yeah. I think that's good.
I probably do it 80% of the time.
Yeah, you should.
You know?
I've been on teams with people who are like, just do it, take the note.
Yeah, yeah.
You know you're going to get a note on this kind of move, but like, yeah. just do it. That's funny. Take the note.
Yeah.
And so I've really had those conversations. Do you feel like you've had those conversations with, because you're on Rococo.
Mm-hmm.
You've how long have you guys? 2, 3 years?
This is our second year, actually.
So in going into your second year, is that the kind of conversations that you guys have?
You know what's funny? I would say we're having conversations of trying to get back to how we were our first year.
Uh-huh.
Because our first year, because we're so new and so excited,
uh-huh.
I felt like we were playing bolder because we didn't know as much.
Mm-hmm.
We would still get a lot of notes, but I felt like after the first year, towards the end of the first year, we started becoming less bold and started applying the notes more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had trouble applying the notes while still remaining kind of loose and bold with
right.
some of our playing.
Yeah.
So I think this year, We've had the experience. We kind of know ourselves, specifically the technically good shows we want to have and mm-hmm. what we're working on. So now I think we're starting to get our feel back of, okay, we know technically what we want to work on, but we can still be bold and have fun and make stuff that is kind of off the notes possibly.
Right.
Just to keep some of the excitement that we used to have last year.
It's hard. I think that you get on Harold Knight, or at least you get positive feedback, and I'm
yeah.
sure all of you guys did. You're all so funny for being a particular kind of player.
Yeah.
And then you get on Harold Knight, and it's a little bit like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, wait, that's what I do.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of interesting because there's also definitely more, I feel like there's more of an ebb and flow uh-huh. where, in the sense that this week you might be that type of player that you're known for in the indie scene that kind
yeah.
of makes you, this is what I am. I'm kind of like, I make bold physical character choices and
yeah.
stuff like that. And then the next week, you might be the person that's just kind of assisting in the group games and maybe the one that tags out and puts another scene in a fun location. Mm-hmm. You're kind of the one.
Are you good at that?
Sometimes.
I'm not great.
There's been, it kind of escapes me because I'll remember some shows where I feel like I saw the Herald from a bird's eye view, mm-hmm. and I was able to like put stuff in certain locations and make certain things happen mm-hmm. in almost every scene. I'm like, yeah, that felt good.
What do you think distinguishes that? Because I've had that experience too, where I feel like, oh man, I was really looking at that show from above, and then a lot of time I'm like, I don't know.
I don't even know. Sometimes
I think it's just the show.
It's just the show, and sometimes maybe even if it's just like. You know, you never control the ideas that are created in the opening that you're going to use for the Herald. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just that right kind of chemistry of ideas where, like, yeah. I kind of know all these ideas. I kind of have already feelings and a point of view and kind of, like, steps and places to go with these ideas already. Yeah. And then sometimes there's a scene where, like, I have no idea where to go with this.
Great.
This idea, like, I don't know. And sometimes I think what's cool, too, is – a lot of people I notice, even as a student, mm-hmm. when you're doing class shows, you get so in your head, you're like, how am I supposed to improvise while memorizing all these different things? I got to memorize two premises from the opening at least.
Right.
I got to memorize what, not only what I did in the first beat, but what other people did so I can possibly support.
Yeah.
And you get overwhelmed and you end up kind of locking you down and you can't make choices. I think what has been great about Herald Night, especially if you have a great, like, I love my team. Uh-huh. I trust everybody on my team.
Yeah.
Almost every time where I've had nothing, I'm like, you know what? I don't have anything for this, but I'm not going to worry about it because I know someone else has something for it.
Right.
And it's kind of freeing because you can let your certain weaknesses you have for a certain show just be a weakness mm-hmm. and not try to fix it because I know someone else is going to fix it. I have what I have. I have one idea.
Yeah.
I don't know any other initiation. And if someone uses that idea, that's all I got. Someone else is going to come out with an idea and I'll just receive it, you know?
Yeah. That's great. Was there a moment where you felt like all that stuff, like all those rules were kind of internalized and you were like, wait a minute, I'm good?
There was a moment in 201. 201 was the hardest class I took.
You had that moment in 201?
It happened at the last class of 201.
Great.
But it wasn't like everything. No,
but that's great.
But there was, I think most of the class, I kept getting the same notes. I kept getting, whenever the unusual thing came up, address it. You have to call it out and label it and address it. And uh-huh. I would keep letting that moment go by.
Right.
And then I kept getting the same notes over and over again. I'm like, man, why am I not getting this? Everything felt clunky. Everything felt like I'm walking with cinder blocks on my feet. I can't, like, just ball, you know?
Have you done that?
I have done as cinder blocks on my feet.
Great.
As a workout, you know, get your legs strong for basketball season.
That's right. Okay.
But New the Mexico last... State. New Mexico State, that's what they did. It wasn't even a part of the... Yeah. Don't tell the NCAA.
But the last class.
Last class, we just had to do... we had to do a couple monologues and do some scenes and do some tag outs, work on all this stuff, walk-ons, tag outs, other stuff. And I was just bawling. Like, I was just playing. Like, I didn't think too much. I was able to, like, walk on and do funny, you know, character stuff that I liked. I was able to tag out and take it to certain locations. I was able to remember a certain premise and initiate that fun in a scene. And it all kind of came together in that one little moment. I'm like, oh.
And you thought, oh, great, I'm good. I can keep going.
I can keep going, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not I'm good, but, like, I get it. I can keep going.
I get it. And I think what helped, too, with that was being outside of class and doing so many practice groups.
You did. I coached you in a group, and you were very good.
Oh, thanks, man.
That weird group in the park.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun group. I kind of missed those.
Was that your 201 class?
No. I didn't even start practice groups until, like, halfway through 301.
Okay.
So that was just, like, offshoot of someone else I did 301 with that had a fun group that I just kind of joined. Mm-hmm. And so in doing all that, doing the reps, doing those practices and doing indie shows, that's when I started becoming less precious, mm-hmm. I think, about doing things right.
Yeah.
And just start playing. And start trusting for some of the training to come through.
I love that you say that. I feel like that's a thing that students forget a lot. And as a note that is so helpful to get them, like, you could just play.
That's
why you fucking came here in the first place.
Yeah.
You didn't come here to just do some hard fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're good at this, so just play. Like, have an idea that you like and play it. Really act it.
Yeah.
which is great. Did you have a moment in classes or on Herald Night when you were like, fuck, this is too hard. I don't know if I'll ever get better.
It's probably somewhere, I don't know specifically in class, but there was kind of like always a fear of mine of playing, like being on stage and being perceived as, oh, that they're doing cheap stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's not funny. They're going for the joke. It's not really.
Now, who's that? Your team?
No, myself.
You. Okay.
I have, like, there was a fear that I don't want to be on stage and make certain moves where people on the outside could look at him and be like, oh, that guy's playing for the joke. He's not really that insightful or smart about the reality of the situation.
Huh.
And so whenever I would be, like, sometimes in a, either in 401 or even in advanced, and doing scene work, and every time I slip into that thing where I'm playing a funny idea, but I'm not being truthful or being insightful about the reality of the experience and being called out for it.
Yeah.
Those were times where I'm like, why am I trying to be funny when I can just be real to the situation? Especially when it comes to like specific, like if I do a tag out and we're going to the civil rights thing and we're exploring that, I never wanted to be the guy, especially since I'm one of the few, you know, black people in the class to take it there. But be not honest about it.
Right.
To be like, okay, they took it there, but that's you know, there's so many things wrong with that scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a double thing. Like, ah, now I'm, you know.
You mentioned smart. Do you feel like that is like a weird albatross in this community where everything has to be so fucking smart?
I think so. I think that's definitely a perception I had when I watched it.
Mm-hmm. Do you still?
Not as much. I think honesty.
It's there, right?
It's still there. Yeah. It's definitely still there.
Right?
Yeah. Especially when it comes to playing game, especially like blowing out the world and stuff. It gets so mathy. Mm-hmm. And when you can make those certain moves and quickly, that makes you feel like, wow, that was witty.
Great.
And that's impressive.
Yeah. But did it make you feel as, because it sounds like what you're saying is you gravitated towards other things.
Yeah.
And so did it make you feel like your particular type of contribution was undervalued because the real premium is on smart?
It's a balance. I felt like I still had something brought to the table, but I felt like something was a little bit missing. Like I wish I can also add this more consistently where I can add this stuff. Like I knew I can be on stage and give a certain emotion, a certain kind of feeling to a scene, and it would be kind of funny just as like an actor or performer.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, now let's layer in pattern. If that, then what else? Now let's layer in that stuff. Now let's get away from the game and do a second game move. Starting out, I felt like I was not as good as that.
Right.
And even just the, you know, the quick, witty moves that are, you know, on game and if that, and what else. Sometimes, like, I don't know how to.
It's interesting. I think that there's, like, a particular type of player, and I don't know if this has been your experience, but there's a particular type of player who is so discernibly valuable, and it is that person who can make those moves, and it is that person who is able to see all the logic of it and do that math, as you were saying. I've never been one of those people. And it sounds like you're saying you're not either. And I have the skill, and you do too. I mean, I've seen you play. You're great. You can acquire those skills, but if it's not your natural hard wiring, it always feels a little bit like, I wish I could do that too.
That's definitely not the main thing. Like if someone were to watch me play, that's not the main thing that would pop out.
Right.
Like when you watch Fernie play, you're like, this dude has everything
great
on, you know what I mean?
He's so smart.
So I can lock into that every now and then. I'm like, okay, now I feel this part. And then other times it's just like, maybe it's just my emotional reaction to a situation, or maybe it's just, you know, a certain type of walk on a character I add to it.
Yeah. But that's not teachable. Like, I think to me, it's like, that's very valuable. The other stuff is so teachable. I think sometimes, did you ever have an experience where you felt like you were discouraged from doing that? Like big emotional choices or characters?
I think I don't.
You don't have to cite, like, this person told me I'm never to be emotional, but.
Yeah. I don't think I ever got discouraged from making those choices. I think sometimes it was just like, if you're going to play this type of character, you have to do it within the structure of the scene.
Uh-huh.
And you have to be a little bit more aware and on point to what the game is and what how it helps the scene. Mm-hmm. So like sometimes like if especially if I would do like a walk on and I think it'd be something that adds to it, sometimes it's a little more distracting.
Right.
So it's like if you're gonna make that big choice, you gotta listen like a hawk on the specifics that was being presented and really what is the idea we're gonna play with and then add to it from that point.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
How has your experience on Herald Night differed from what you expected?
I felt
what
like...
What was your expectation?
Expectation was really... you know what was weird? Is watching Herald Night mm-hmm. and being a fan of it. It feels like...
It's a weird show to watch.
It's weird. It's crazy. You're like, what the heck? Okay, we're going to talk about all this in class. Mm-hmm. I would be kind of blown away sometimes uh-huh. by certain moves and, yeah. you know, just the level of play, right. especially as far as, like, how to keep the whole structure of the Herald in your body and, you know,
sure.
be able to pull it off night after night. And then actually doing it, I never feel like the shows we do or the shows that I've done stack up to the shows that I've seen.
Yeah, but you're never going to be able to see it from the outside.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what's weird about being on Herald Night is I have no idea. Like, my perception of as a fan of Herald Night and mm-hmm. being on it, I don't think will ever be, I don't think can ever be connected because, you know, I just don't, I don't know how people see us as funny. I don't know how people see the type of improv we do. Is it quality improv? Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't have much of a expectation other than from my own fandom of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to put it into words once you're playing. So I think the main thing was just to like, how do we keep growing in front of an audience?
Right.
Rather than, because it's part of entertainment, but you don't just want to entertain. You have to actually grow, take risks, and actually, it's an educational, Herald Night is educational too.
Yeah.
So how do you use that and do it in front of audience without just like, let's just, you know, hand for the audience and
yeah.
be fun and not do, you know, not do quality improv.
Yeah.
But I like it right now. I mean, I mean,
it's great.
I'm at a point right now where I really enjoy the growth and the learning of how to grow as a team
mm-hmm.
rather than just entertaining a crowd. I think we've been on... I mean, I perform with Rococo enough where it's just like, that's just a part of, the audience is just a part of it. It's
yeah.
great, but I'm not like doing it for the audience. Before it was like, the main point to be on Herald Night was to do this in front of this audience.
Right.
But you
it's
do,
good audience.
It's a great audience. Yeah. It's the best. But sure. you do enough shows where it's like, great, the audience is just another great thing involved with it. But the main focus is doing better and better Heralds.
As a team.
You
get to the point where you just want, and maybe you've had this experience too, where people will be like, I saw that show. Man, you're the funniest.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not a compliment.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
And I know people think they're being nice.
Yeah.
But you want, like, someone recently after a JV show was like, I really love that your team because of how well you guys work together. And I was like, I'll burst into tears right now. That's the greatest compliment you could give.
Yeah.
Because that means something about what we're doing is working, that you can see that thing.
Yeah.
Have you had an experience like that where you felt like, man, we were all together tonight? Can you point
Ooh.
To a moment?
There was a silent, I think it was the first time we did the silent soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
And we did it at Franklin.
So hard.
I think Nick Mondernach was coached us before.
Yeah, he's great at it.
Yeah, giving us some little tips. Mm-hmm. And we did that show, and it was just like we did stuff we just went outside of our comfort zone
mm-hmm.
so much, and we were all in it together. We did stuff where like we invited the whole front row on stage and.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they did a dance-off and stuff like this, and then we all switched places with them, and then we were watching them on the show, and then we just naturally went into a group game where people were knocking over chairs and stuff like this, and it kept heightening to the things we knocked over to where me and Cody ran backstage and pulled the couch out of the green room, and we pulled it on stage, and we created, like, this little tableau, this little picture, and kept it there. And then we slowly kind of reversed and cleaned up everything from the same thing all the way to the stage was perfectly. It was just like, and the audience loved it.
Yeah.
And it was just the connection that we had into going somewhere that we had no idea where it was.
And feeling like you successfully did that.
Successfully,
right?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's and I think what you were saying too, starting off on Herald Night, you kind of have that pressure where you got to feel like you hold your own, like you earn the spot. So you're thinking a little more individually, like, because there's so many great players.
But you guys were good right away.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, you came right out of the gate. That was a good team.
It was.
I have no idea what that's like.
Oh, really?
No. No, my first team was not good.
It was, well, we were blessed because we just happened to have such chemistry from the first moment we met at, like, House of Pies.
On stage. Oh, off stage.
Even off stage.
But that doesn't always translate. I was just talking to Billy about my first Herald team, which is very, we had the most chemistry, got along the best, and it didn't translate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really lucky.
Very. I mean.
Because you guys definitely had good shows right away. Yeah. We were still on Herald Night when you guys started, right?
Yeah. But I think individually you're like, I have to, because there's so many great improvisers that sometimes didn't make Herald Night. Mm-hmm. You're like, that person's
all
really
good.
All
the time didn't make
Herald Night. And there's definitely numbers of people I thought that were definitely better than me.
That's interesting. Yeah. Did you play that game before you got on where you're like, this person's ahead of me, online ahead of me?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't exist, that line.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird?
The line doesn't exist, but you make it.
It exists so clearly in your head. You're like, well, there's this many people in front of me.
And you do so many shows and you see them there and like, oh, you start like, yeah, this person's a better, you know, they're better than me.
So
we're like this. But eventually, you know. So in my head, sometimes I felt like I had to place, I just had to hold my own. I had to earn my spot individually. Mm-hmm. And then that went away. And it started about being like having that feeling that we were whole. Like we created a whole piece of music that just felt like its own thing as a herald.
Yeah.
And that was just such a good feeling. Because even sometimes when I would have shows and I might have very funny specifics, but the show was like, you know, it wouldn't feel good.
That's not a good show.
And even sometimes when I didn't do what someone would say from the outside, you weren't in most of the scenes, but I felt like there was little stuff I added to help the show come together as a whole, and the show felt great. It would feel so
Isn't that weird?
So
you can
good.
Have a good show personally.
Yeah.
Or maybe you don't feel like this, but you can have a good show personally and be like, my scene was really fucking funny. And it's fine because, of course, you're going to have a good scene. You're funny, right?
Yeah.
But then if you do a show where you do, like, a really great support move, I'll drive home like, well, you did it.
Yeah.
So good. I'll be like, fine. Like, I was good.
There was
you don't feel I guess what I'm asking is, do you feel as satisfied? And I think that's probably why we're improvisers, because you don't necessarily feel as satisfied if you walk off stage and you're like, well, my giant pickle character fucking crushed.
Yeah.
Good night.
It's all about the whole.
Yeah.
That's what really like attracts me about it. Because when that moment happens, it's like magic in the audience. I mean, the audience gets so thrilled by it.
Yeah.
And it's also about that connection, too. Like, whenever you pull off this thing, you know you did it because you were kind of outside of yourself serving something greater.
Yeah.
And that's such a great feeling. I remember, it was like a few shows ago, I just made one support move that kind of punctuated one of the first beats, but it was so satisfying.
Because
I'm like, that's all, the main funny thing with these people, and I just got to hop on and just add the cherry on top. And it was a type of move that I don't normally make as far as like a game move.
Yeah.
So that was just like the rest of the show. I'm like, I was good. We had a great show and I just had the one support move that just kind of added to a great scene.
You probably felt better than you did after like you had a show where you genuinely crushed.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
very bizarre. And there's a type of player that does that every show.
Yeah.
Right? There's people on my team who do that every show. And there's definitely people on Rococo too who I've seen who like always like crush a support move. It's just a very valuable skill.
The moves I'm always trying to like in search of to try to like get into my body are those support moves where something else happens that's, I'm not going to say in contradiction to the game, but it's just another thing that is not supposed to be a part of the game. Mm-hmm. And then you can add a support move that flips that thing back into it.
Brings it in.
Brings it back in.
Makes the shiny object part of the room.
Exactly, right? And
I don't know what that means, but think it means the right
thing. But yeah. You know, something that's kind of like, here's a game. There's this other thing that's happened and everyone is expecting something ungame-like to happen. And then you can flip the game right back into it. And it's like, oh yeah, that could, of course that could be part of the game. We didn't even, you know.
Do you think that you'll always do this?
Always? I think there's a part of me that will always.
Like, do you think old you is going to do this?
You know what? Here's what I found out too, going on. I'm less excited about just doing improv generally.
Yeah.
And I'm more excited about playing with people that I'm really excited to play with.
Right.
So I'm really excited playing with Rococo and doing Harold's and creating something together.
Yeah.
I'm not as excited about just like going to an indie show and just,
whatever.
You know, because it does feel individual.
Right.
Like, I still want to grow.
There's something less satisfying about doing a show. It's not necessarily stakes. I feel similarly. It's like, I don't want to fucking do a show where I know that it doesn't have to be that good.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what you're saying. It's like, you're excited about doing a good thing with people that you respect.
Well, exactly. And there's even like, when you see like Zach Woods or some of these, you know, some of the UCB four, they're like, as improvisers, you're like, I want to see them because they're a great improviser.
Right.
And they're kind of at a point where they just.
Who is that person for you?
I mean, I think Zach Woods on one end of the scale is definitely something when I watch him play, I'm like, some of the stuff he does, I wish I had that skill. And I love.
What is it that he does that you love?
He always can encapsulate what is happening in such articulate.
He's very articulate.
He just like, so there might be like, all this up in the air. And we're like, man, there's all these unanswered questions. And with one sentence, he can answer all those questions.
Yeah.
And put you at a place where I'm like, now we're further along in the scene than we were before with just one sentence.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think the improvisers that can always fill the holes in, like no matter what, those are the improvisers I love watching.
Yeah, his command of everything is amazing.
Yeah.
Who else?
Mary Holland is another one because I think just the emotional aspect of and the characters they create. Sometimes she'll do moves that are so funny, and thinking about the math of the move, I'm like, it doesn't fit anywhere in the math, but it's just so honest.
Yeah.
So it's like there's different things you can add to the scene that aren't just the math of if that and one else. It's just like, nah, that's just an honest human thing that kind of goes away from, you know, probably most people can't teach that.
No.
You just kind of have to have that
you
awareness.
You can't teach what they do.
Yeah.
No.
Mazoukas.
He's the best. He's the very best. When I was taking classes, I was like, that's, if I could be like half as good as that dude, I would be very happy.
Yeah. I saw him doing a scene where no matter what you lob at him, he's always going to be able to top it on point. Becky Drysdale, the same thing. Mm-hmm. Almost everything you throw at her, no matter what your argument is, she has a better argument for it.
Right.
You know? And Heather Ann Campbell is another one too. Super funny. Just like, the thing that's so great about Heather Ann Campbell for me is she is so strong on the one end of just physicality and characters and stuff like that. And even silliness and wackiness while keeping it so grounded in emotional intensity and the actual math of if that then what else and the next game move, like all that is kind of combined in one.
What do you think, what is your ideal show? Like, what do you think if you could be like, if you could, I'm thinking of like Mandzukic and Friends or whatever. Is that your ideal show or what would you, how would you structure it? I don't want you to pick people, but I want you to.
To be honest, I would say the funnest I've had outside of Hero Night has been like the hip hop improv show. So if it's like a very, special guest, you know, probably like ASCAT, which is the same thing, but it's like with hip hop. But whatever the special guest is, if they have like a fascinating life or fascinating stories and stuff like that, and being able to just do, you know, do scenes off of that,
right?
And then eventually being able to tie all those things together, kind of like towards the end, that would probably be the funnest. Whatever is like truthful, monologue based that we can do off someone's life. And just go crazy with it. I think that type of format seems like it would be the funnest. I know one of my weak points is like mono scenes because I haven't had a lot of training in mono scenes. And I tend to feel like when I'm in doing two-person scenes, I never feel pressure to and. I feel like the ands always come naturally off of whatever the person gives me. I'm able to and it.
Do you think a lot?
Not in two-person scenes, but in mono scenes, I think a whole lot.
But and when you in regular scenes, do you think, like, oh, this is what I'm deliberately doing?
Sometimes. There's okay. It definitely goes in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the times where it's the best one, I could just, sometimes when I'm like doing a specific character, it just, I don't think.
Yeah.
I just do it.
That's what I'm trying to ask. I guess the longer you do it, the more like, I don't think that much. Like, yeah. I just do, I guess you do have it, enough of it is in your bones that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But sometimes that, do you feel like the longer that you've improvised, the more that idea, like in the beginning, that don't think thing seems like, well excuse me.
Yeah,
you're exactly. telling me all these fucking things and I'm supposed to not think now all of a sudden.
That's insane. Yeah.
Do you feel like you can now connect to that? Like, don't think, just be free to improvise.
There's actually a yes and a no.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time where
it's
I was doing,
questions. Okay.
So yeah, we're doing like indie, doing the indie improv stuff, mm-hmm. And performing a lot and having a certain amount of training under your belt. There's definitely times where I didn't think as much mm-hmm. and it was just like, just go.
Yeah.
Especially playing with Phi Beta Negro. We had such chemistry off top where I would just do moves that.
Why don't you say who's on that team?
Phil Jackson.
Very good. We were on a Harold team together for 2 weeks.
Great. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks?
He got, I don't remember the specific, he got added to a team that I was on. And then someone left, I think, maybe. And then he got added. And then maybe 2 or 3 weeks later were auditions. And so everyone got kind of shuffled. And he got shuffled off that team to somewhere else.
Okay.
But I love him. He's great.
He's great, yeah. Aaron Covington.
Uh-huh. Also funny.
Very funny.
He really makes me laugh, man.
He's a funny
I think
dude.
He's great.
Kenneth Jackson.
I know that dude.
Michael funny. Gutierrez. And he did more Second City stuff.
Okay.
And David Ayala.
Okay, yeah.
So that was our kind of team. And so playing with them, we just got to, it kind of felt like fast break basketball. Uh-huh. Like we just played and we instantly would be able to hop on each other's ideas without even thinking about it. Like I felt like I knew where we were going
right.
more than I did with the other indie teams I played with.
Okay.
So during that, I didn't think that much at uh-huh. all. I just like would just go. And then being on Harold Night, I think sometimes it kind of has the reversed effect because you're trying to do good heralds.
You think so much.
So you're thinking so much. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you still have a little bit of that, just play and
course,
stuff like
yeah.
that. But, you know, you're still being, still thinking more. So even now, at the point I'm at right now, where we're trying to grow heralds, we're trying to just be a little more efficient in first beats.
Mm-hmm.
With as far as, like, whenever the unusual thing comes up, be a little more efficient in labeling, be a little more efficient after the label.
Sure.
Doing the justification, just
great.
And then getting away from it and coming back to it later. Because I think in just not thinking and just playing, you can have, like, an unusual thing come up. You can call it out, but not really get a label on it. And then something will say something, and you just want to react off of what they just said
mm-hmm.
that has nothing to do, that doesn't address the unusual thing. So I think there's a balance of just performing and being, just reacting on instincts. And there's a balance on, in the back of my mind, I know I need to be efficient
mm-hmm.
and I've done
so
it enough.
Thinking, yeah.
yeah, I'm thinking, but I'm not thinking too much. It's like when someone does something, it's like a split second. Okay.
Instinct
that's usually
now more
yeah.
than like, oh, what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, boom, that's a flag. Okay. I'm going to get a label pretty soon.
What kind of conversations do you have with yourself after a show? Like, if you have a shitty show,
mm-hmm.
are you driving home? Do you drive?
I do drive.
Right.
I drive too much.
I know, we all do.
I
would just check if you don't ride a bike or walk. So you're driving home.
Mm-hmm.
And, what do you, are you going over in the car? Or are you just turning on Howard Stern and getting home as quick as you can?
Sometimes I go over it. And I think most of it kind of goes on, am I playing scared? You know, if I have a bad show, that's probably the first question I ask. Like, am I holding back? Am I playing with fear? Cause that's the main thing I don't want to have, when I perform.
Yeah.
So am I pushing myself to do stuff that are outside my comfort zones? Am I taking risks? Am I doing the thing that popped up in my head as an instinct
uh-huh.
and doing that? Or am I shutting that thing down because I have fear that, oh, that's going to take away from the scene, or, oh, that's probably not going to be funny? Or so I'm kind of like going over, like, did I play with fear if I had a bad show?
Right. If you had a good show, what's the ride home like? You turn off Howard Stern?
I'm like, oh, hell yeah, dog. I'm just living in that moment. But sometimes I actually kind of, the good show is just, I would say the good shows are more looking at the wider, the overall show rather than me specifically. So if I do good, then I'm thinking like, how did that affect the overall show? Did this kind of scene and did these beats kind of overall help? Uh-huh. And did I just do good in my scene and not help out in this other scene? So it's like, if I have a good show and maybe we don't have a good show, then I'm asking myself, why didn't I help out more in other scenes?
Yeah.
And if I had whatever show, but we had a good show, then I'm just thinking overall, why did we have a good show and how can we keep these elements for the next show? Sometimes I think when we were getting certain notes on the Be Grounded first beats, we started keeping the first beat patient and we started keeping the second beats patient as well. So they felt like the first beats. And I was like, no, we don't like playing like that. Once the first beats are grounded and patient, let's just go. Let's just start playing and let's start playing quicker and getting to it quicker. So that was another thing recently that I had in the back of my mind. It's like when we had a show and it was solid, but something felt off. I was like, that's because after the first beats, we still kept that same pace. And I know for us, we like playing faster and we like playing a little more, just taking a little more risks and just, so in my head, I'm like, cool, let's just focus on playing faster next show when it comes to after the first group game, getting into second beats.
Yeah. Do you feel like, how much do you think being an athlete affects the way that you conceptualize this collaborative sport? Because I also grew up as an athlete, and I think it at first was bad because I was naturally very competitive. And then eventually it felt very good because it was like just like when you're on a good team.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of split do you see in that?
I think it helped. I think it helped a lot.
Yeah.
I think first because when you're training in improv, you're taking so many different classes, you're doing so many different things. It's more of an individual journey because you're just trying to grow as an improviser rather than a team thing.
Yeah.
So for me, being an athlete really helped me grow as an improviser because I'm like, I know what it needs to take as far as work ethic and practice to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of came at it as an athlete. I'm going to put in this amount of hours. I'm going to go to these shows. I'm going to do 4 practice groups a week. I'm going to write down notes after each practice and keep a journal.
Do you think people don't do that enough? I think there's a lot of people who are like, I don't understand why I'm not on a team. I'm like, did you take all the classes you're supposed to take? Did you do it practice every day? What's your issue?
I definitely think because I think that is true because a lot of people don't come from that background of being an athlete.
Yeah.
I think if you come from different places into improv, sometimes you don't have that skill on how to grow at something.
You're just like, I'm good. What's the problem?
Or it's just like, because even when I first started acting, I'm like, all right, as an actor, what do I do day to day to be better?
Mm-hmm.
I know what to do is basketball. I can dribble. I can write down my drills. I can do all these things. It was very simple. For improv, it was even easier than acting as far as to get better because it felt there's a regimen.
Designed for you.
There's a design for you.
Yeah, there's a track. You just go.
And I think some people aren't used to doing things with that in mind.
Mm.
So I think being an athlete and having that type of drive definitely helped. And I think, I definitely see it, it's not really sometimes it's not evident in other performers because they just didn't have that background.
I guess.
They just kind of do it for fun. Like, this is fun, and just kind of hang out and stuff like this. But I know for me as an athlete, it was fun, but it wasn't.
But you were working.
Fun is fun. It's work.
You're working. Yeah.
It's work.
I feel the same way. I do feel like it's weird because you do get to a place where you're like, I want to play, but you're working so hard at it. So when you feel like that, what do you do? Because the answer I've found, and maybe you found something different, but is not more improv.
Yeah, because there's sometimes
you max out.
I think to a point.
Yeah.
To a point it's more improv, and then after that it's like I'm just burnt out.
When you're not getting better, you reach a plateau, right? Yeah, so same in sports. You reach a plateau, you can't improve. You're not improving. It's been a couple months. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I think it's whatever obligations I have to keep, I kind of keep those. Mm-hmm. But I just get back into just getting back in my family, or hanging out with my little cousins, or reading a book I'm interested in, or I tend to not read too much fiction, but I like reading nonfiction. I like reading essays.
What kind of fiction? Fiction I have a hard time with. What are you reading right now? What have you read that you love, nonfiction?
It's James Baldwin's Critical Essays in His Writing.
Uh-huh.
So he wrote a lot about, like, during the Civil Rights Movement and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He just had, like, a lot of essays that kind of, it was more sociology-based, kind of breaking down race, breaking down his experience, breaking down just the cultural issues in America and even around the world. And so I just love reading, like, critical essays, and most of it tends to be, like, on a sociology type thing.
Like critical analysis.
Yeah. Those fascinate me. And even certain poetry type stuff, like Ralph Waldo Emerson, like the transcendental, you know, poet and stuff like that. I like reading his
stuff.
Those
are chill dudes.
Yeah, real chill, like those environment chill on trees, man,
stick
trees.
The outside.
Universe is in the
Calm
trees,
down.
Bro. Yeah.
You'll be all right.
So, and philosophy, those type of things.
You can read philosophy? I try.
Well, Ralph Waldo is kind of like has a philosophy aspect. Yeah. I don't know if I can read like the Immanuel
Kant.
Like dense
philosophy.
The Immanuel Kant type stuff, I don't know if I can read that.
Yeah,
but
that
some
German
of the other
shit is hard.
Yeah.
But like some of the older, like a good Seneca or something like that, I feel like it's helpful. That's a good thing. I think that's a good thing to do that not enough people do. They're like, well, I'm doing well. I guess I just keep doing improv.
Yeah.
No, all your scenes are about improv. Do something else.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard to know when the time is to do that thing, to just like kind of step away from it for a minute and let yourself become more interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like, especially now that people are really, really coming out of college and just doing, I mean, I did that too.
Yeah.
But you need to experience some stuff.
Definitely. And I feel like, I feel like too sometimes when I would kind of feel kind of blocked and I would start thinking about my life experience. I'm like, I've done a lot of interesting stuff. How come I'm not bringing any of this in my scene work? Yeah. Like I've been on a crazy trip to Tanzania twice. I've seen so many different, I've been to India. I've seen so many different things. I've, you know, grew up with a dad who was a cop, you know, and growing up like that. And then I also, you know, had to do self-defense stuff with him. And then I had to, you know, my family reunions, just going back to the Thanksgiving, the stuff I see there, like how come that is not in some of the scene work? Because that's all interesting.
You excise so much of what's interesting about you because you assume that everyone, not you don't assume everyone has had that experience, but it's so ingrained in you. You're like, well, that couldn't possibly be interesting.
Yeah. There's a certain, I think there's a certain feeling too where by being like being an improviser, it's like it's an art, so you have to create.
Yeah,
and you
got to
do this stuff and blah blah blah. And if you just if you just say something that you've experienced or that you've seen from your life, that's like it's not really creative. I'm like, no, that's what you need to use. That's what you need to bring to do this.
Yeah.
Like constantly, always go in that pool of experience that you have and use all of that rather than like creating.
That's great. Yeah. I think not enough people do that. What what do your parents think of your...
Oh, they love
they
it.
Love it.
They love it.
Because you're from L.A., so
LA.
they've come and watched you here.
Oh, yeah. They've watched a lot of shows.
What was their reaction?
There's excitement, too, especially my dad, because my dad was only able to go to 2-on-1. Then he couldn't keep going just because of other stuff he was doing and he couldn't afford it. So when he's watching the shows, it's almost like seeing a premonition come true, because when he first took me, he said he knew he saw me doing this.
Oh, that's great.
He was really excited, too, about Phi Beta Negro, because when he first started doing classes, he was like, you know, improv is great. It's really cool, da-da-da. He was like, man, I just have a feeling like there's going to be, like, an all-black team and stuff like that.
Oh,
because
cool.
He was like, even at the shows, he goes to the shows, he sees people on stage, even in his class, he's no black people.
Yeah.
He was like, this is a type of art form that I know would just people would, like, the black community would love and like excel at. So when I started doing Phi Beta Negro, he was really excited because he was like, he felt like he saw that. He saw it kind of go in that direction. So he's you know, he likes
that
a lot.
That's so cool. So let's talk about, we're about to wrap up. Let's talk about some advice. So what's a good piece of advice that you got?
Good piece of advice.
From a teacher or coach, fellow player, whatever it was.
I would say there was a as a okay, as a straight man, mm-hmm. good piece of advice as a straight man, always have an emotional want in the scene. Mm-hmm. So you're not just serving the function to figure out what this unusual person's philosophy and game is and only help them play it. You're not a servant to only their game. Mm-hmm. You have your own emotional want in a scene that you're going after. And that just kind of helps keep the dynamic of a scene realistic. And also for the straight men to be funny. Like, if you're just a human being that has an emotional reaction to this person's things because they're preventing you from getting what you want.
Yeah, everyone thinks a straight man is boring. That's such a real misnomer.
Yeah, it's like the straight man, it doesn't just have to be a wall that the unusual person just gets to ping pong ideas off of. Like, you can be another player playing.
Who told you that?
I mean, most recently it was James Mastriani, but I've gotten it a few times earlier too.
Okay.
And so that's a thing that helped a lot. There was an idea about playing game and being the character that has a game. Mm-hmm. It's just like once you have that philosophy, there's a certain thing that triggers that philosophy. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to be person playing a game, but everything has to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes when you have a philosophy and like, okay, I think I got my game, sometimes I short circuit because I think every stimuli that gets presented to me, I'm like, how do I make a game out of this? Mm-hmm. But just be specific about the game. If you're more specific about the philosophy, you realize I do this because of this specific trigger, mm-hmm. then all you have to do is worry about those triggers that come up that make you
so simplifying
do the game
it.
Yeah. Kind of simplifying it so you're not having to like, all right, but what makes me act like this? You know? Mm-hmm. I would say, too, a skill that I love seeing in performers and I think is very valuable and I'm always trying to keep it attuned with me is being able to feel that kind of unspoken thing that's going on in the room that mm-hmm. no one has kind of addressed or said anything about. And being able to label it. Mm-hmm. That can happen if no words are said. If you're like, you know, starting a scene and you're washing the dishes and there's just a little energy, a little vibe in the air that you feel between the other person. And you can put a very specific label that puts like a kind of context to it. That is always so useful. And the audience loves it because subconsciously, I'm sure the audience always feels it. They might not know they feel it, but subconsciously they feel it. And whenever you speak to that, all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, that is what's happening.
That's great. That's a good skill.
And I feel like whatever that thing is, there's always multiple labels that are valid.
Yeah, it's whatever you see.
Whatever you see. And I think however articulately you can say it, I'm just like, yeah, that is true. Like, there's always like, for any moment in a scene, there's always like five things that are going on, potentially.
Yeah.
And if you can just pick one of those things that is, you know, kind of happening and always be able to have that skill, like, oh, I feel something. This is what's going on. Yeah. Oh, I feel something again. This is what's going on. And be able to say that, that's such a great skill to have. And I know early on I would watch scenes and I was like, why was that so funny?
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a formulaic, mathy game move. It was just funny. And it's because those people are so attuned to what was happening in the situation that they just said it. They just said what they thought was happening. And I was like, yeah, that is true. Someone's trying to talk. So they're doing a scene and they're kind of being sloppy. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about your what is wrong with your hands? Are your hands okay? Dude, you've been sweating for like 5 minutes. What? You know what I mean?
Great. Yeah, just calling out the reality of the way someone's behaving.
Yeah.
So much of, I think, what we do is behaviorally based and it doesn't come up enough. Like, someone can act truly crazy and everyone will be like, well, that's Cheryl.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You gotta call her on her shit.
Or there was even one time, I think you can address it as your own character. So, like, I initiated the scene and I was just trying to be normal to start a scene to talk to a girl at a bar. Oh, hey, how you doing? You come here often? Blah, blah, blah. And I can just, how I did it, I wasn't trying to be unusual. I was just trying to be normal in order to get to what I was trying to drop the unusual thing. But how I did it, I can feel the audience.
That was unusual.
Thought it was slightly, they just had like a little reaction.
Yeah.
And then I felt that. I was like, you know what? I'm being really creepy right now. I'm sorry about this.
Great.
Apologize. And they died laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, you just address whatever this vibe is and don't deny it.
Because that's the reality. I mean, that's you saying in the scene, like, okay, this is a real person. If a real person acted like this and was giving off unintentionally creepy vibes, they would try to say, my bad, dude. You know, like, I'm weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's great. What advice would you give to a student who's just starting out?
I would probably...
They're very funny. Just assume they're very funny.
Just assume they're very funny. Here's the thing. Assume that they know they're very funny.
Yeah.
Because if they know they're very funny, then I wouldn't give them certain advice. Because the most important thing was, for me earlier on, was to just trust your point of view and trust that the things you think are funny are funny.
That's good.
So, like, when I was in 301, I think that's when I first started feeling that. I first started feeling like, oh, I think this about this thing, and this is why I think it's funny, and that is good enough.
Yeah.
And to have an opinion about so many little things. I think before, when you're learning improv, a lot of unusual stuff passes right by you because you feel like you don't have an opinion about stuff. And then later on, the more training I got, the more I had opinions about every little thing.
Great.
The more I was freely sharing my opinions and thoughts about all these different little things. So whenever things popped up, I had a point of view about it. That was the thing that helped about mostly was like training myself to have point of view and opinion on small things.
Just trust it. And trust that opinion and use it, right?
Trust the opinion and use it.
So would you give different advice to, what about a student who feels like they're not sure if, they're not so sure if they're funny?
Mm-hmm. I would just probably.
So they're taking classes, they're doing pretty good, but they're still, they're feeling frustrated, they don't get it.
I would probably tell them to do more, I say practice groups and indie shows, and just play.
Just play
because I feel like in the playing you find all that fun stuff. Like when you first start off learning something, I think the playful aspect kind of gets lost because you're so in your head trying to learn. But a lot of the stuff that that kind of appeals to you, the way you know something is funny is when you just play and you're not even thinking. So I would say just have a balance of, you can be in class and you can stress out, feel like you're not funny, because I did that. That happened to me.
Sure, everyone does that all
but
the time.
But if you have the, everybody. Okay. Everyone questions their validity as human beings, right? But I think if you have that extra outlet of just being able to play and be silly.
No pressure situations.
Mm-hmm. I think certain instinctual things come out. They're like, whoa, that was funny. That little moment kind of defined who I am as a player.
Yeah.
And I think the more you get opportunities to do that, the more that kind of bleeds into your actual training too, where you get to take that kind of more free, kind of more instinctual player and kind of match it up with the more technique player.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of, you know, that kind of helps. Because when you're in class, the time is not that, it's
finite.
It's finite.
Well, all time is finite, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But you put so much pressure. Yeah, I know. But you put so much pressure on yourself because you might only get three scenes in a class sometimes.
Right.
So it's like, these three scenes, I have to be good. I have to be this. But when you perform a lot and get to get all that fun out, you don't feel so much pressure. And then you just get to, you know, kind of be more of yourself.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about that we didn't hit?
You know what? I'll just say I'll just talk about what I'm trying to work on now. The one thing I'm trying to work on now is emotional content of the scene. I felt like earlier on I was more emotionally committed in certain scenes. Mm-hmm. But when I started getting more into the math of the game and this, you know, tagging out and where to put this in second beats and stuff like that, and just keeping all the overall specifics of the show so I can help out in third beats, sometimes it makes me less emotionally real in a scene. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to be, I want to make stronger emotional choices and make certain choices where it's not even like, I've seen a few people on my team do this where the best heighten was just an honest emotional reaction. It wasn't even like another game move specific. It wasn't like, you know, another walk-on thing. It was just like doubling down on the emotion of a scene and just like letting that flow. And that was like the best move you could have ever done in the scene. And there wasn't much thinking to that. It's just like being honest and making a strong emotional choice. So I think that is an aspect and like a flavor I want to bring to my scene work now. which I think is, you know, I love watching those kind of, that extra emotional flavor to a scene.
Yeah. That's a good thing to work on.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
No, that's
it. You want to air any grievances?
I got a lot of beefs.
Pan and compliments?
A lot of beefs in this community. Mm-hmm. A lot of people going to catch these hands when I see them. But, you know, we're going to deal with that later. You know what? I just feel like UCB is just, it's an exciting place to be, and it's such a great community of support that I'm very grateful. Like, people like you who I watched at Harold Knight looked up to and would get coached and great coaching deals from, I get to speak to you about improv, and, you know, I get to see you, you know, talking and hanging out and stuff like that. It's one of the few places where people that I feel like are ahead of me also feel like peers at the same time.
Yeah, we're all the same.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
To feel like that, to feel like everyone in the community is a little bit of an equal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a not. I didn't feel like that when I first started in New York, and I feel it really strongly here.
Mm.
And I eventually felt it there, too. I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
And that was a long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Lon Delphius Jr. will be your host. Say your thank yous and sign off as you wish. That's how I wish. That's how I wish to sign off. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy. This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.